I'm Ivy.
I'm Rachel, and we are Swords and Sapphics, a podcast all about representation, queer media, women with a capital W, and a little bit of nonsense.
So start sharpening your swords, sip your tea, and join us as we obsess over the wonderful beings that are women.
Hello.
Hello.
We have a really exciting episode today.
We really, really do.
Yeah. What are we talking about today? Or perhaps with who?
So, we are talking about A Sweet Sting of Salt. And we are talking to the author of that book, Rose Sutherland.
Yeah.
And it's going to be lovely.
Mm-hmm. It was really exciting.
It was really exciting. For those who don't know yet, because the books just came out, mm-hmm. when we're recording this, it should have just come out on the
9th of April.
Of April, I want to say.
Yeah.
It is a sapphic historical novel with a reimagining or a retelling or loosely based on The Selkie Wife, which is an Orkney folklore of Selkies. And it's set in rural Nova Scotia, and the main character is a midwife. And it's very, my favorite part about it was that, like with a lot of sapphic historical movies we're getting at the minute, thank goodness, and books, mm-hmm. it's very proudly sapphic. Like, there's no, so from what I've seen so far, the homophobia is very muted, and like the queerness is very much normalized in Jean's world, which is very beautiful.
Yeah, it's more like an open secret type of thing, it feels like. Yeah. We're only in the middle of the book, but I mean, we've already talked about it. I'm sure we're gonna talk about it a little more once we finish, because it's really, really, really good book.
It's really great. Perfectly written. And it has like its little cozy moments as well. And it just feels so like it's one of those books that just feels really well executed. Like there's nothing that I would complain about. Like everything has its purpose, and it also has heart in it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really, what's really fun is that I don't know the original tale it's based on. And I didn't look it up because I want to be, you know, surprised, no spoilers. But I really, for a long time, you don't know what's going on. And it really made, because I was reading last night also, and I wanted to get to like the answer. Like I wanted to know, I was on the edge of my seat, because it makes you wonder, and it's great. It's really great. It's a really great book, man.
Yeah. It is. The vibes are just like immaculate. Like it's set on a very like dreary coast. And there are just things that are off, but there's a big build up to what that might be. So you're just kind of left wondering. It's really great. Yeah. But for me, I did know that obviously I don't know the folk tale itself, but I know, obviously knowing it was about a Selkie.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, but girl, Jean, baby girl, she's a seal. Why can't you?
Yeah.
The sun has webbed fingers.
The signs are there. Yeah.
Yeah. The characters wouldn't know that yet, but I knew that. And I was like, you should know that too.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's really great.
Anything else you've been enjoying these days?
Is there anything else that we've been enjoying?
I don't think so. I wasn't reading much because I was reading only this, and otherwise I'm
working. Same.
I did play a game, and I have to talk about it because it's a wonderful game.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Netflix now has games, phone games in the app, and it's, first of all, I was really weirded out by it because I was like, what? No. Then I found out that they also have games that I have on my wish list for a while on Nintendo, and one of them is Storyteller. And it's very difficult to describe, because even though I heard it described a billion times, it still was something different than I expected. So basically, you get a little, you get a plot of a story, and you have to create the story using characters and scenes. And each character in each scene can do something different, and also they can do something different based on how the scenes go after one another. So it's sort of like a Lavalom, like the thing you do with your brain, like logic things.
Yeah, like it's kind of like a
Puzzle.
puzzle,
Yeah,
but you get
that's
a
it.
storyboard set out for you, but without any clue of the scenes or the what should be where, and you
Yeah.
kind of have to make the story from what they describe it should be, in
Yeah.
a way that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's really, really fun. It was really, really great. I finished it. It was quick. And I played it on my iPad, so I saw it a little bigger than on my phone. And the graphics were just immaculate. It was just
Yeah.
beautiful. It was a beautiful, fun game, and I really loved it. And I think everybody should give it a shot. If you have Netflix account, it's for free. And you can download it in your App Store, and then you just have to sign in to Netflix account when you start the game. It's a really, really, really good game.
Yeah, I got it as well because naturally I have no personality of my own. If Ivy is doing something, I have to do as well.
You're welcome.
And I'm really enjoying it also. I like how it's through the game you're flicking through the book. I love page flicks. I'm a
I
simple.
know. And when
It's
you close the book, there is like it's from Library of Alexandria, was it? And there are like people who read the book, like who borrowed it before, like the old library card. And there is Edgar Allan Poe and some other like big writers of our time. And it's very cute. It's very soft. I love it.
It is. It's lovely.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like it gives you the historical vibes as well because the pages are brown and the stories are like set around like a more historical setting most of the time. And some of them are also like kind of reminiscent of other stories, like there was Snow White in one and Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
It's good fun.
It is. It really is. Yeah. So I can't recommend it enough. So that's what I've been enjoying. It's been great. And I really miss it already. I want to cry.
You can help me with mine. I get really annoyed and have to turn it off because it's like for a while I'm good, but then I'll go back to it the next day and I'll get it quite quickly, but my brain reaches a limit with it.
Yeah, I get it.
And I just can't figure it out.
You didn't figure it out, but I'm happy to help you figure it out.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're normal. But yeah, I had a similar experience. Like when I was playing it late at night, like the two nights in a row, which happened, I got tired and I couldn't see it. But the minute I opened it the next day, it was right. Like I did
Yeah.
the one that I got stuck on immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do the same thing with like crossword puzzles.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, wow, why didn't past me know that so quickly? But that's just how it would be.
Yeah. Anyway, that's that. I really love the game. I can't stress it enough. It made me feel kind of like in a very specific kind of way.
We
I
don't have
think.
much more to share this week. And
No.
also because when this is going out, it's gonna be a different time in life, so
Yeah. It's true. True.
it's gonna be April.
Yeah, that's true. But we can get to the interview with Ross.
Yes, let's get to it.
Enjoy.
Well, thank you for joining us. Do you want to start by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, everybody's most favorite question. Let's see. Well, I was born and raised in rural Nova Scotia, and have followed a lot of weird rabbits down a lot of weird holes. I spent time studying theater in New York. That was a lot of fun, but didn't really lead me to anything permanent. I have worked a lot of strange day jobs. I ended up going to France with a pastry internship at one point. And while I was there, I kind of found my way back to writing, which is something I hadn't done since I was writing very bad fan fiction when I was about 16. And somehow that's the thing that finally stuck for me. And I continue to be entirely baffled by it, but thrilled.
Wonderful. So you're about to have your new book out soon. When this episode's going to be out, I think we're going to say yesterday.
Oh, cool.
So tell us a little bit about A Sweet Sting of Salt and what inspired you to write it.
Okay, so A Sweet Sting of Salt, which is a title that if I thought about the lisp that I had growing up, I might have rethought a few times because I have to like think really hard every time I go to say it, is essentially a loose reimagining of the old traditional folktale of the Selkie wife, except it's set in the 1830s in Nova Scotia on the South Shore, like very rural, right on the seacoast. And it's told from the point of view of a young midwife who one night hears something in the yard outside of her house, and when she ventures out, finds a woman in labor who does not speak a word of English, who eventually we realize is the new wife of her next door neighbor who lives at the top of the hill. And everything kind of snowballs from there.
And we're loving the book. I think we're both midway in and we're enjoying it so much.
Yeah.
Well, then I have extra reason to spoil anything.
Yeah, no yeah. Spoilers.
It made me cry in a public transport, FYI. So thank you.
Oh, okay. There we go. Author goals, check. Yeah. I'm sorry, but also I'm very not. I'm deeply curious. Can I ask? Well, no, I shouldn't ask because that would also spoil things for people.
It was right at the beginning, actually. So it was when Murin is how you pronounce her name? When she was giving birth and after she held her baby for the first time, I was so close to being home and I just started crying and I wanted to keep reading because I was so close to finishing the chapter and I wanted to make it. But I also had to stop every like other sentence because I had like tears bursting. It was experience for me.
Well, gosh, that's the biggest compliment I think I have gotten in a while. So thank you.
So welcome.
So that was a wild scene to write, by the way, just because, I mean, first off, I have no kids. I'm never going to have kids. But the fact that there are kids is part and parcel of that, of number of versions of the Selkie wife myth. Mm-hmm. And it's also part of what makes that situation so horrifying to me. So I was like, yeah, no, we're definitely like that was kind of a big part of the jumping off of it was that I was like, well, that's horrible. And obviously we're meet a midwife as the other woman here.
And we was actually going to mention that, you know, what made you want to write about midwifery in general and how much research did it take to kind of get that role down?
You know, it's funny. I don't know that I ever really set out going, oh, that's what I want to do. It just seemed like the entire idea for this book kind of burst into my head in a very short span. Like, I mean, it changed a lot in the telling, but, and it wasn't even a historical idea. It was a Tumblr post where somebody said, oh, imagine the idea of Selkies testifying as victims of human trafficking before the UN. And my brain kind of went, huh, wow, that's really, that lands exactly where I have, right in the spot where I've always had issues with that folktale. And all of a sudden, really quickly, I was like, God, and there's always a baby and there's this and there's that. And I was like, oh, well, if a midwife met her then, and it all kind of came together like that. I will also say, ages ago, I read, wait, it's literally sitting right here, Amy McKay's The Birth House, which is also set in rural Nova Scotia, and which I did not pick up and read again while I was writing this. I was very like, I just want to see what comes out of my brain if I don't push too hard at stuff I, you know, things where I'm like, I have all this mythology and stuff floating around the back of my head. So with the midwifery, it was very much kind of, well, I've read multiple books that have midwife characters. I have, you know, watched a million movies. And while we don't go to movies for historical accuracy, they do give you a good sense of vibe for things.
Yeah.
So I basically was like, okay, look up some tools, look up some stuff. And then I started, and then I went down the rabbit hole of YouTube videos of seal birth.
Wow.
The whole other thing. But so like, so, but that's one of the only scenes where we really see Jean deeply in action. So it, I did not do scads and scads of research. I did a very surface, like, here is what I need to know for this, because otherwise I'm going to keep reading forever. This is fascinating. And I just wanted to keep moving forward. I will say, in a weird coincidence, last year at Pride, I ended up falling in with a large group of, in fact, lesbian midwives.
Really?
At one point. Right. And I was like, oh, this feels ironic. Okay, cool. Hi. Nice to meet you. Glad to know you really exist. And I didn't just make this up.
Book so two is set in the present.
No, I didn't.
Set book two in the present with a group of lesbian midwives. We would read it.
The book has, especially at the beginning, there's a heavy leaning to the subject of postpartum depression, which we were both really surprised and moved by how easily you wove into the story. And because it's not, even now, it's not a subject that is discussed. So how did you came to it? Like, what was the decision behind it? Any kind of specific reason?
Now, I have not had any like specific point where that has impacted my life at all. It was simply that it's a topic that I'm aware of. You know, I have friends who have kids. You know, you do hear stuff about it. And as I started writing and was like, okay, what is the reason right off the bat that all these alarm bells start going off in Jean's head when she meets this woman and she's acting so strangely? And that seemed to me like an obvious thing that she would potentially hit on, even though at that point in time it would have been even less talked about and less recognized as something. But that you know, women who work with women know things about women. You know, we in our own circles we talk about things. So it made sense to me that her as a midwife would be like, well, this is a thing that sometimes happens. And that was also how I ended up kind of arriving at the backstory of what had happened with her own mother. So that it added this extra sense of urgency to it for her personally, that there was a situation where obviously she was not responsible for that at all, but she still has that kind of that strange sense of guilt around it, because we get like that with things. And so for her to be like, here's a personal situation from my own life that has impacted me so much, and then I see this other woman and the situation has so many echoes for her that she kind of can't look away from it. And of course, it turns out that's not really what the problem is with Mirren at all. But yeah, it seemed like a really natural.
Yeah, no, it was really, really nice to see. I was a little surprised by it because it's not something we're used to. And even now, I feel like only now the whole taboo is like breaking. And it was really, really nice. I really enjoyed that part.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
And we have a listener question from Lillian from our Discord. She says she loves the title, and how did you come up with it?
Partly, I'm just a sucker for alliteration. like, I, the chances of me throwing a bunch of words at a wall and picking all of the ones that start with the same letter out is high. But there was something specific in that I very much, like, from the very, like, because I had that title right off the bat, like, from the very beginning. And it didn't take me a very long time to come up with it, but I am certain that it was just, I was like, I wanted so strongly for it to invoke the sea and sort of a sense of bittersweetness. And well, it ended up, I actually, at one point, I did in fact have a very deliberate title drop somewhere in the book.
I noticed it. And I was like, beta was
like, yeah. And I do manage to keep a subtle reference in there, but it had literally been a title drop. And one of my early beta readers was like, don't, you can't do that. This is an AO3. Don't.
I love it every time. It's the best thing.
You're writing a real book now. Don't do it. And I was like, okay, but I'm still going to kind of do it. but so that moment, calling back to it, like, that was really very much about what I wanted to evoke. And that little moment where the title does get referenced there is kind of manages to haul up all of the things that were kind of circling in the back of my mind when that title popped out of me and I went, oh yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Just as a little side, are we allowed to know what fan fiction you wrote?
Oh God. You know, when I was really young, I used to write just about everything, but it is not actually, I assume that it's not actually that hard to find me, and I'm not embarrassed. It made me cringe, but I'm not embarrassed. But no, I write Les Mis fan fiction. I haven't for a while now. It turns out that now that I'm writing all the time, my brain does not have enough room in it to also write in my spare time, which is really limited because, I mean, I work full time as well still. But yeah, I write Les Mis fan fiction. Specifically, a lot of it tends to be horror, which is a little weird. It's very, very, it's very out of left field, but it's always been a lot of fun for me. And honestly, the community of people that I've met through that fandom who kind of embraced my fan fiction when I kind of came back to it about 5 or 6 years ago after having not written anything for fun since I was about 17, really is part of what convinced me that I could actually write a book. Like, that I honestly had just had no idea that I could sustain a story of a length of more than about 2 or 3 chapters without petering out.
Yeah.
And the first time that I rocketed through like 15 chapters of some ridiculous, you know, evil fairy boys kissing, you know, I'm going to just rare pair the two prettiest people in this whole book together kind of deal, I suddenly went, oh, maybe I could write something. And then about 6 months later was when I had the initial idea for Salty. And I was like, oh, this is it. This is the book I'm going to write for myself to prove that I can actually do it.
Amazing.
And yeah, and I'm just, I mean, I'm pretty sure I said earlier, but I continue to be shocked that it actually has worked out as well as it has, and that people are seem to really be enjoying it for the most part. And I could not be happier.
No.
Or more grateful. Like, I mean, how many of people never get the chance to do something they really love, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you're right. We are enjoying it tremendously. So,
thank you so much.
You mentioned that you studied theater school in New York and then you went to France to learn pastry stuff, which honestly blows my absolute mind. I was reading your bio and blew my mind.
The big joke here is that I am sure people hear this and think that I am like some high-rolling nutcase. And the fact is, I grew up poor as dirt. I am still poor as dirt. But I have a lot of hustle and I have gotten very, very lucky. The theater school I went to on a partial scholarship, and just about wrecked myself. But it was the most valuable experience that still has impact on my writing. But the thing with France, I literally was like, I need a better day job, because I had been day jobbing in theater as well. And I was like, I need something more stable. And I went to school to study pastry because I enjoyed it. But also I was like, oh, people always need to eat. I will have a job. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned when it came time to internships to one of my teachers, oh, I really wish I could do more with French pastry. Do you recommend anywhere in town I apply? And they were like, actually, let me get back to you. And then we're like, hey, I have a friend in France. You can just go stay with them in their apartment over the bakery for the summer and bake. And I was like, well, okay, great, I'm in. So yeah, so that was honestly like the biggest of luck. But I'm sorry, that was not what you were going to ask about at all.
It's just absolutely mind-blowing. I absolutely love it. Amazing. So you sort of mentioned how have any of the travels or the information that you experienced inspired your story, or this specific story, or perhaps some other that you're still have ready to write?
Well, I've got to say, theater really impacts on everything I write, not just because it's like most of, you know, like some people come at writing having studied creative writing. I never did. I have no formal writing training. The only things I have ever studied is a single side credit in children's literature and all of the analysis of dramatic literature stuff that I did in theater school that was all like how to pick apart a script and how to understand character motivation and how to find motivation when someone hands you a piece of absolute garbage. Because I have had to audition with some interesting bits of script in my day. And there is something about looking at it and going, this doesn't make sense, but there must be a motivation for it somewhere and I will find it come hell or high water. That has really, really turned on sort of something in my brain that when I start writing characters, not only that they tend to really take the reins from me, but when I start going, okay, well, why is this person doing this? I always have to know what the reason why is. And that includes with bad guys. So I'm like, I like there to be an underlying reason, and I like it to not just be, oh, well, they're off their nut. Like it, you know, so that has been like the really big takeaway from theater for me is just all of that. Plus there's a concept in theater also of sense memory, where we talk about, you know, when you enter a space, and it's supposed to be somewhere specific. And it's like, okay, well, what do you smell? What do you see? What does the air feel like? What is the temperature? What is the ground like under your feet? And the way I write settings and every room that a character walks into is so informed by that, because if I can't see it, I can't put the people there. Mm-hmm. So that's the big thing with theater. As to France, well, I learned to cook. Avoided cook. And that tends to out in funny ways. Like I love to describe food. Food as it relates to culture and time and place is like really interesting to me. And I think there are a few places in this book where it kind of shows, like random recipe for cheese in the middle of it, you know.
Yeah.
But I will also say, like, my time in France, I tend to get so far all of the ideas that I have had for stories are set either in Nova Scotia, where I came from, or they're set in France. And I'm like, okay, this is going to take a lot more research on my part. But yeah, I am working on something right now that is set in the same area where I did my pastry internship. It has nothing to do with pastry, but a little plaque that I came across while wandering around the village on a very hot afternoon. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Cool. And totally forgot about it. And about 6 months ago, someone said something that reminded me of it. And I was like, oh no, that's a great idea. I need to go back to that. So, yeah.
Amazing. So we was gonna comment on, you know, the fact you was born and raised in a similar area. What made you decide to set the story there, and why did you choose a historical setting rather than modern day?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, first off, I mean, I started it while I was living in France, in a 6 meter square apartment, which is, I mean, it was like living in a closet. The bed was a ha was literally jerry rigged out of an old coffee table. And I had not lived in Nova Scotia at that point. Like, I left home when I was 17. To go to New York. When my student visa was up, I came to Toronto. And aside from the time that I spent in France, I have been here ever since. And the fact is that I always very much miss home. I'm currently working on a Toronto exit strategy. Strategy. Oh my gosh. You know what I'm trying to say.
Strategy, yeah.
Yes. I'm like, what is wrong with me? I've turned into a Looney Tune. I'm like Bugs Bunny. But yeah, so I've been working on finding an out here because I would very much like to go home simply because I miss being by the sea and having that easy access to nature. And the landscape is very wild. And that has always spoken to me quite a bit. Which is not to say that all of Nova Scotia is wild. If you ever, like Halifax is a wonderful town. The food culture is great. Yeah, it's a wonderful place. And I'm like, oh, if I could go home and be within an hour of the city, that would be amazing. But so far I have not yet managed to pull it off. So maybe later this year. But so it was partially born out of like just this sort of belated onset. Like, I've been away from home for 20 years, homesickness. And I was planning at the end of that trip to go home and stay for an extended period for the first time in a while. And I just found myself kind of writing to a combination of my memories and my fantasies about it. Like, in a lot of ways, it does have a bit of that kind of cottagecore fantasy that is not like, I try very hard to ground that in reality because I don't want to be like, oh yes, everything about this is perfect and lovely. Like, rural life is hard.
Yeah.
And in the past it was even harder. But yeah, so a big part of it was just simply born out of missing home. And the fact that the landscape there lends itself so perfectly to that particular folktale. But also because it was such a revision of the folktale, it was really nice to pick it up and go, okay, well, I'm not going to put this in Ireland or Scotland or the Faroe Islands, all of which are lovely places that I don't actually know terribly well. Like, I haven't had the opportunity to spend time there, whereas Nova Scotia is a place I know in my bones. So it was nice to be able to set something, a variation on that traditional tale in a place that is in a lot of ways a variation on some of those places. Like, I mean, you know, my own family is from the area, but from various places all over Nova Scotia. And they are that same mix of Scottish and British and Franco-German settlers, you know, who all ended up in this new to them place. I mean, I have family who, you know, my Scottish ancestors ended up there during the Highland clearances. So it was this interesting way of going, okay, I'm going to connect this to my culture, which is said to remove from where this started out. It's funny, sometimes you start talking about things like that and you're like, oh, I didn't realize that was what I was doing.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, oh, I didn't know I actually thought that until I said it. Wow, that sounded cool. I have actually completely spaced on what the second half of this question was after I went around in that circle.
Just why did you do historical? Yeah.
Historical has always spoken to me. I mean, I've never really, I've always been a bit of a dork. I've never really had my finger on the pulse of the youth of today. But growing up, my big loves were always either pure fantasy or historical books. Like I devoured all of the Little House on the Prairie books when I was really little. I will watch like just about anything if it is a period costume drama, although I'm a lot more picky about it now than I was when I was younger. You know, Anne of Green Gables, all of that kind of stuff. So it just feels natural to me to lean into more historical spaces. And also it's like all of that, all of the past informs so much on where we are in the present that really looking back to it, even looking back to it and going, okay, and now I'm going to do something that might feel really modern to people with it, but in fact is not actually, like, people in the past had really modern thoughts and feelings. We just don't necessarily always hear about them. And specifically in the context of queer stories too, because there were definitely queer people in the past. We're nothing new. So being able to go, yeah, actually, this is a way in which, you know, some people could have found a happy ending in the past because people totally did it. You just didn't hear about them. They quietly went about their lives. So
you mentioned that you're already starting to that you started writing something new. Can we get any hints on what we might expect?
I can't talk about it too much. First off, because, you know, one doesn't want to go say too much about their ideas before they've really come to fruition. And I have a couple of things, but I am working on something else that is in the historical with a bit of a folklore angle, set in provincial France in the mid 18th century, in the 1760s, and it is based on loosely based on a true series of events that went on, that continue to be debated to this day as to what actually happened. Which is one of those things where it's like, oh, great, I can do whatever I want and say that's what it was, because what? Just anything in history that is this topic of wild speculation for 250 years, it gives you a lot of freedom to play around. So I'm having a lot of fun, and hopefully I'll get to share it with everybody and they can have fun with it too.
Amazing. We can't wait.
Yeah.
And before we go, we always like to ask what people are enjoying at the moment. So do you have any TV, film, books, magazines, games, podcast recommendations that you want to kind of give a shout out to?
Oh gosh, this is always the moment where I suddenly go, what? You know, it's the ADHD moment where I go, books, TV. I have never watched a book or a TV in my life.
Nothing exists. The feelings.
Right? Nothing exists. I have never read anything. In terms of, I'm also always very behind on TV. I don't actually have a television in my house, so I'm always playing catch up. But I actually, just this week, because Nimona dropped on YouTube, I think it was. So I watched that. And then that YouTube was like, hey, have you watched this? And I ended up watching, and this is several years old, and I can't believe I missed it, but Wolfwalkers, which was one of the G-Kids cartoons from the same, it's part of the same trilogy as The Book of Kells and Song of the Sea, which obviously I've watched and loved. But, and I had so much fun with that. Like, I know it's meant to be a kid's film. I was like, I had such a blast with that movie. I was like, this is delightful. If you haven't watched it, you totally should. Also, it felt weirdly like serendipity that I stumbled over it because reasons. But anyway, so I just watched that and it was really lovely. I'm currently in the middle of reading some gothic books for a talk I'm doing that I think is going to be before this airs, in the middle of March. But I'm doing a talk in a couple of weeks with a couple of women who write gothic books. So I've been really quickly trying to work my way through all of their stuff so I can ask them intelligent questions about it when we get there. So I've been reading, right now I'm in the middle of Paulette Kennedy's The Devil and Mrs. Davenport, which is, so far it is so good. And occasionally it's set in the like mid-century in the Southern US, and it is making my feminist heart occasionally so angry for perfectly good reasons. But yeah, so I'm really enjoying that. I have no idea if it will have a sapphic angle or not, although Paulette's last book, The Witch of Tin Mountain, absolutely did. But so that's what I'm into right at the moment.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really were so excited to talk to you because we're really loving the book. And we can't wait to see what you do next.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad. Thank you so much. Honestly, it was so nice to meet you both and have a chat. And I've been enjoying kind of like attempting to slowly catch up with the podcast because I'm very bad at listening to podcasts. I'll tell you that much. I'm just either I get busy with doing something with my hands and stop listening, or I get so invested in listening I stop doing whatever I should be doing. Yeah. So it's like, so I actually have 100%. To say, oh, it's podcast time. But I've really been enjoying like on some of the old ones, so yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
And I hope you enjoy the rest of the book.
Oh, I'm sure we will.
I'm very excited. Yes, absolutely.
Ta-da. I love her.
Me too.
I do stop a lot and think these days how cool it is that we just get to talk to a lot of authors, and people want us to read their books and talk about them, and that makes me excited.
I know. Yeah. It's sort of like that little proud moment because, you know, it's a lot of work to do this podcast. Even without the blog, and with the blog, it's a different story.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the blog is definitely the hardest part.
Yeah.
Recording takes like 2 hours of our time, but the blog, whoa.
Yeah. Sometimes the editing can be challenging, especially when we go overtime. Yeah. Yeah. I took that upon myself and I'm fine with that, but sometimes, whoa-wee.
Yeah. And we also both have our burdens.
We all have our burdens.
I'm the blog burden, you're the editing burden.
Yeah, that's why every time we record I get stressed when I am looking at the time. And I can tell when I'm editing, I can tell the moment when I know there's the time and when I'm starting to get stressed. And what also happens is that because I'm looking at our faces for so long, I manage to find something new about us every day.
I've never been perceived as much as Ivy perceives me.
Yeah.
I thought I was a normal person with no weird quirks.
Maybe we should have a segment where we discuss what Ivy discovered about us the week before.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, recently she brought up the fact that I usually say was instead of were. I don't know which parts of me are the fact that I'm from the north of England where nobody speaks properly anyways. No offense to other northerners listening, but we have our things. And what's like some weird autism thing that I never viewed as autistic before, because I do know that autistic people have a different way of language anyway, proven by the fact that I always put on a posher accent when I'm talking to Ivy, even though she's like the closest person in my life and I don't want to mask. But like I still do it because I'm scared she doesn't understand me because she's from Prague.
And jokes on you, I usually don't understand anything anyway.
No. Well, that's the thing. Whenever I try and purposely put on my real accent, you go, what? And I go, oh, no. She doesn't understand.
That rarely happens when you're trying to put your own accent. I hear, the thing is, she's talking to me, right? She's talking one way. And then she turns to talk to someone of her family. And it's like completely different language, completely different personality.
It's not a different personality.
But it looks like it. Like, you know, when your accent changes your personality?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Or when you get upset, you really slid back into it. Or when you get a little tipsy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I understood you then. The thing is, like, you know, ADHD and brain. So sometimes you say something to me and I'm like, what? But when you start repeating it, I get it.
Yeah, like, I do the same thing.
Yeah. And also, I'm really bad at hearing things. So I will forever ask you what at least 3 times a day.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway. Funny thing is that it starts
a little insight into our friendship.
But when with the what's and where, I was just intrigued by it because, like, I like to learn stuff. And I noticed that. And I was like, is it some, like, grammar thing or whatnot? So I just asked, like, I was genuinely curious. Yeah.
I think it's me. I think that it's, I've noticed it now myself. Like, I don't know why I do it. I don't know, understand myself at all sometimes. I have no answer for you about that. Because obviously when I'm writing, I know all the grammar and the rules. But when I speak aloud, my brain doesn't choose to acknowledge any of it.
And the thing is, I noticed that I started doing it too. It's like a few times.
My favorite thing is when you put everything in past tense, but the wrong past tense. Like you say, I hurted myself.
Oh, yeah. But I don't know how that started. The same with send it. I don't know what it is.
Sended me.
Yeah.
I know that I used to say as a joke.
I think I got it as I think I really I was like, oh yeah, it's a joke, and I was in on a joke, but now I really struggle letting go of it. And
that's
also,
how most things happen.
And there is also a scene in Modern Family when Gloria is like, no, it's ended on an email, and I love the line so much, and that also is not helpful.
Yeah. So if you're ever listening to us and thinking these girlies don't know. Have a basic grasp of English. They don't talk absolute shit. They don't talk like human adults. This is why.
Yeah. And you know what? It's really the way we talk on a podcast and the way we talk like when we're not recording. If you think this is bad, you have no you should play Fortnite with us someday. We created our own language basically.
I have never once used the right name for anything in Fortnite. Like a sniper rifle is a snipey snipe. The flamberry fizz is whatever F word comes out of my mouth at the time. Like flambe blueberry drink.
Yeah.
The chug splashes are splashies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We used to have some more good ones.
We did. I'm thinking. Yeah, every time we see a chicken, we burst into a fucking stupid song. Every time I say I'm in a car, Rach is like, I'm in mommy's
I'm
car.
I'm in my mom's car. Vroom, vroom. And as you saw before, when we figure things out.
Yeah, we figured it out.
In tribute to Ricky Dicky Doodah Grimes from The Walking Dead. I figured it out.
By the way, when she has Ricky's skin, it's the amount of time I hear Ricky Dicky Doodah in like in the span of 2 hours is certainly something.
It's his name, Ricky Dicky Doodah.
It is his name. That's true. Yeah, we're fun, is what we're getting at. We're really.
Yeah. Between us, I don't think anybody else would really understand. Even my 11-year-old sister glances between us and goes, wow, you're weird.
She's
and
just
she's
jealous.
Weird. She's weird.
First of all, and she's very jealous that she doesn't have this. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is so unique. And I love it.
I agree. I love it for us.
Yeah.
The fact we have a podcast, though, like if anybody heard us playing Fortnite, they would the last thing they would suspect we did together was host a podcast where we talk incoherent sentences.
Well, are we though?
Semi-coherent sentences.
Yeah, sort of. Anyway, that we really took a turn once again.
Yeah, happens.
Oh gosh. Anything else you'd like to add?
Well, we've had some generous donations on Ko-fi recently, so we'd like to thank everybody for that, especially if you're giving it to us just because you can and not because we're gonna post you on the blog, because that's just really sweet.
Yeah,
so thank you for that. And as always, we have new content coming out on our blog.
We don't have black bot blog. Honestly, I'm like, what even is the right word now?
Blog.
The same when Ro stumbled upon one word, I was like, that's normal, isn't it? Like, what's the problem?
Yeah, happens. Our blog, swordsandsapphics.com, where we're very professional.
Yeah.
We always have new interviews coming out and new release lists. Yeah.
And we have some really exciting episodes planned.
We do.
So strap in and hold on tight.
You better hold on tight, Spider Monkey.
Yep. Oh, that actually reminded me. I think there was a Twilight reference about it in Ali Hazelwood's Bride.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was something about Spider Monkey. And I don't know if it's... it was just fun stuff. I was like, oh, yeah, I understood that reference.
I understood that reference.
And did you understand that reference?
Then I have to read it if there's a Twilight reference in there.
Yeah. And it's fun. Anyway, yeah.
Remember to support women's wrongs. Rights. Hang on. Always remember to support women's rights.
But most importantly, support women's wrongs.
Especially if they are from the sea.
Yeah.
I don't know if the women's do any wrongs in A Sweet Sting of Salt. But I guess we'll find out soon. I feel like they could never.
I agree. And if perhaps they do, you know, the monkeys don't hear, don't speak, don't see. I'm one of those.
Or as I like to say, head, shoulders, knees and toes.
Yeah. Just to explain this a little bit. What was it? Like, you had your hands on your ears and I was like putting it on my mouth. And I was meant to be like the monkeys. And
the Rachel monkey emojis.
Yeah.
The monkey emojis.
Emojis are, I feel, the origin is somewhere else.
Yeah, the hear no evil, see no evil.
Yeah, that was.
Speak no evil.
And Rach starts again.
Yeah, I thought we was on two different wavelengths, but that's okay.
But we came back together.
We always do.
And now we have a fun story about it.
Yeah. Anywho.
Until next time, we shall see you later, alligator.
In a wild crocodile.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Swords and Sapphics. You can enjoy a new episode every Wednesday.
While waiting, you can visit our website, swordsandsapphics.com, and find lots of articles, interviews, and guest pieces.
Feel free to contact us with any requests, questions, or inquiries through a form on our website or directly to our email, swordsandsapphicspodcast@gmail.com.